The Mishnah in Sukkah writes that min haTorah the mitzvah of netilas lulav applies on the first day of Sukkah, so lekachta lachem b'yom harishon, priyat tzadar, etc. And in Mikdash, the mitzvah applies all 7 days, because the pasuk concludes, "Esmachtem lefnei Hashem elokeich mishivas yomim," and the Torah's Kohanim says in that pasuk, "How do you do esmachtem lefnei Hashem elokeich?" Esmachtem means with netilas dalad minim, and lefnei Hashem elokeich means in the Mikdash. And then the Mishnah says that after the Churban Beis HaMikdash, so there isn't going to be anywhere in the world where they're going to be shaking the lulav for all 7 days. Bechman Zakai was the chief rabbi. The Gemara says he was the Nasi for 40 years. Part of the 40 years was before the Churban HaBayis, part of the 40 years was after the Churban HaBayis. He and his bezin made 9 takonis. So this is one of the 9 takonis of Rabbi Bechman Zakai. A few of them had to do with Zechel HaMikdash. So this was Zechel HaMikdash. After the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, we should shake a lulav each day. We should recall the fact that in Bizman Shei Beis HaMikdash HaKayim, there used to be a mitzvah to shake the lulav every day. Because the mitzvah of lulav kol shiva, bigvulin, all over the world is only midrabbanon. So that's why the Gemara has a machlekes, whether you recite the bracha or not. Maybe you only say a bracha on the first day Sukkot, the rest of Sukkot is only midrabbanon, so you can't say kiddushanu b'mitzvos v'tzivanu. The Gemara comes to the conclusion that we do say a bracha. We say a bracha on hadlokas neiros chanukah, we say a bracha on mikra megillah, even though it's only midrabbanon. So the Gemara says that the v'tzivanu does apply even on a mitzvah midrabbanon. So that's why we paskin that lulav nito kol shiva all over the world, zechel hamikdash, even though it's only midrabbanon, we still recite a bracha. The Rambam in the Pirush HaMishnayos quotes an interpretation from the Talmud Yerushalmi that when it says in the Mishnah lulav nito kol shiva b'migdosh, it's not restricted only to the Beis HaMikdosh, to the Azorah. It even applies to the Holy Era Atika. We have in Chumash, sometimes the Chumash uses the expression lefnei Hashem elokeichem and has different meanings. Sometimes it means v'echalto sham lefnei Hashem elokeichem ma'aseh digonecha b'sirochcha v'yitzarecha v'chores b'korcha b'tzeinecha. Should eat my sheni lefnei Hashem alakech. Means in Yerushalayim, and then sometimes it means shachadus ben abakel lefnei Hashem ishech the karbonis in the Azar. It doesn't mean in Yerushalayim, and sometimes lefnei Hashem means the whole harabayis. The Gemara Rosh Hashanah quotes the pasuk, v'chatzotzus v'kol shofar hariyo lefnei Hamelach Hashem. So the Gemara understands that in the Beis Hamikdash in the harabayis, the Gemara explains on Rosh Hashanah there's a mitzvah to blow shofar, on Tainus Sibah there's a mitzvah to blow chatzotzus. So that's outside of the Beis HaMikdash. But in the Beis HaMikdash, both on Rosh Hashanah and on the Tainus Sibah, when you blow one, you have to blow the other also. You blow the Chatzetzis in conjunction with the Shofar on Rosh Hashanah, you blow the Shofar in conjunction with the Chatzetzis on the Tainus Sibah. The Gemara says that's only in the Beis HaMikdash, and the Gemara says in the Harabais. And the Gemara derives it from that Pasuk in Tehillim, Chatzetzis, we call Shofar, Hariyu Lefnei HaMelech Hashem. So Lefnei HaMelech Hashem refers to the Harabais. The Minhas Chinah points out that the phrase Lefnei Hashem sometimes means Azara, and sometimes means Harabayis, and it sometimes means the whole Yerushalayim. These are different levels of Kedushas Beis HaMikdash. So here, the Pasuk that tells us that there's a mitzvah Netilas Lulav of Kol Shiva is based on the phrase in the Pasuk, Usmachtim Lefnei Hashem Alakechem Shivas Yom. So what does it mean Lefnei Hashem Alakechem? Which part of the Beis HaMikdash? Does it refer only to the Azara? Does it even refer to the Iratika? So the Rambam in the Pirush HaMishnayos quotes from the Talmud Yerushalmi in the Mishnah Torah. The Rambam does not quote this. But in the Pirush HaMishnayos, he quotes such an interpretation from the Talmud Yerushalmi that Lulav Nito Bamigdosh Kol Shiva refers to the Holy Iratika. So the Bikuri Yankif is the first Sefer that Rabbi Yankif Etlikin wrote. Very good Sefer. This was his Reishis Bikurim, his first Sefer. He's the author of the Aruch Laner and different Mesichtas, and the author of the Shadus HaTshuvas, Binyan Sion. So in his Bikur Yankif and his Chibur on Hilchas Dalid Minim, the Mishnah Berurah quotes every page in Hilchas Sukkah, he quotes from the Bikur Yankif. He has so many good things to say. So he's the one who points out this Einfal, that according, if you put together the Rambam and the Pirush HaMishnayos, that there's a mitzvah called Shiva, the Sheikh Lulav Nir Atika, with the Rambam in the Mishnah Torah, that the Rambam paskins the Kedushas HaMikdash Yerushalayim is Kitchalosi Lavoi, so the Atika retains its Kedusha even Mizman Hazeh. So you come up with a Chiddush that there's a mitzvah, a Lulav Kol Shiva in the Old City, Nir Atika. Yeah, so the question is, why did Rabbi Yechem and Zaka have to make a Takana Zechel HaMikdash? They're still doing it today. all the people who go to the Kotel Maravi, they're still shaking low. Why do you have to make a Zechel HaMikdash? They're still there. So good to Kasha, but that's how the Bikur Yankov suggests, that if you put together the Rambam and the Pirush HaMishnayis with the Rambam and the Mishnah Torah, the Rambam and the Mishnah Torah says that Yerushalayim retains its Kedusha Bizman HaZeh, the Irat Ika still called Lifnei Hashem, and the Rambam and the Pirush HaMishnayis quotes the Yerushalmi that Lulav Nitol Bamigdush Kol Shiva, Migdush doesn't only mean Azor, Migdush means for these purposes, the Smachtna of Hashem Lekech means the Holy Irat Ika. So it'll come out that there's a mitzvah in HaTorah to shake a Lulav Kol Shiva in the Irat Ika. So let's say Allah HaLamayis, somebody davened in Bayit Vegan, Shachris in the morning, and Chalamayit Sukkahs. Then he walks over, he takes a bus and he goes to travel to visit the Kotel Maravi. They have big duchening on Chalamayit. So he goes over, so he's Mukhiyev Na'aman HaTorah to shake Lulav again. The Lulav that he shook in the morning, that was only the Rabbanon, because that wasn't in the Irat Ika. Or let's say a tourist comes from Chutz La'aretz, someone comes from Tel Aviv. So he's davened in the morning, shook a Lulav in Tel Aviv, that's only the Rabbanon. Now he comes to the old city, he's Mukhiyev Ben HaTorah to shake a Lulav again. We wouldn't say that he has to say a bracha, because this chiddush of the Bikur Yankov is based on the combination of the two Rambams, the Rambam in the Sef, the Rambam in the Mishnah Torah paskins that Yerushalayim is kitchel lasilav. So they write it on the spot. This agrees with the Rambam in Hilchos Beis Abchira. And the Rambam in the Pirush HaMishnayis, he quotes the Talmud Yerushalmi that lulav nito kol shiva b'migdosh refers to the Holy Irat Ika. So that the Rambam himself in the Mishnah Torah doesn't quote. So both of the Rambams are questionable. One is more questionable than the other. But that's where the Bikur Yankov came up with such a chiddush, that if you're choshish for the both Rambams, it'll come out. So you can't say you have to say a bracha. Let's say the fellow daven in Bayit Vegan in the morning, then he goes to visit the Kotel Maravi in the afternoon. You're not going to say that he should shake a lulav and he has to say a bracha, because now he's a mechuyev ben HaTorah. It's a suffix. So me suffix. That's what a lot of people do. You come to the Kotel Maravi. So they tell you that they give you a matana malas lahachzir. Usually in Shulchan Aruch it says that you don't need shalachem for the remaining 6 days of Sukkot. You only need shalachem on Yom Tov Rishon. And the rest of Sukkot you don't need shalachem. So some of the Rishonim hold, Tesis holds on the first daf in Lulav HaGol, so you don't need shalachem for the remainder of Sukkot when the rest of Sukkot is only midirabbanon, bigvulin all over the world. But in Beis HaMikdash, that it's Minatar all 7 days, so you need Shalachem and Chasid Pasels and Hodar Pasels, everything is Leikuva. So the Ramban disagrees with that. The Ramban says that even in the Beis HaMikdash, that it was Lulav Nitol Bamikdash Kol Shiva, you didn't need Shalachem. It's not the same mitzvah of Netilas Lulav, Lakachtem Lachem Shalachem, that's only on the first day Sukkot. The rest of Sukkot is Ismachtem, it's a different mitzvah, Ismachtem. It's not the mitzvah that Netilas Lulav applies Kol Shiva. But Tosis apparently holds not so. Tosis thinks that in the Beis HaMikdash that the din was that lulav nitol b'migdash kol shiva, that's the mitzvah of netilas lulav. So just like you need shalachem on the first day, so Tosis holds that you would need shalachem for all the days of Sukkot. So when you go to the Kotel Maravi, there'll be a good Samaritan who will give you here. They know that you didn't daven shachris. You look like you're from Tel Aviv. You look like you're from a different part. They know all the people who davens in the Rova. So they'll give you a matana maslahachzer. They won't tell you to say a bracha, that they know that it's only a chumrah, but they'll encourage you to do the mitzvah. So I remember Rabbi Gerelich, Zichron Livracha, used to be a Rebbe here in the yeshiva. So he said they were sitting and learning in Brisk, and no one ever dreamt at that time there's going to be a Medina. Whoever thought it was the furthest thing from anybody's mind. Even the Rav Soloveitchik said he used to talk a lot with Rav Chaim Moshe. So he said Rav Chaim Moshe was very good in politics. He was not only a genius in learning, he was very good in politics. So he said to Rav Soloveitchik on one occasion, when hair will grow on this side, on the palm of my hand, then that's when there's going to be a Medina in Eretz Yisrael. No one could imagine there's going to be a Medina. It's only because of the Holocaust. And then after the Holocaust, the whole story, so everything was l'mayla min ha'teva. But no one ever thought it would be. So Rav Gerelich said they were Bachrim sitting and learning by Rav Elvala Soloveitchik. So they were talking about, with Rav Elvala Soloveitchik, they were talking about this Bikuri Yankov. So one of the boys asked the Shaila, what would the din be on the first day Yom Tov? Somebody davened in Bayit Vegan. They didn't know Bayit Vegan. They didn't know Yerat Ika. They didn't know what this is all about. But they were raising a question. If someone davened Shuk Alulav on the first day Sukkot, not in Yerushalayim, and then he walks into Yerushalayim, also you would say that according to the Bikur Yankov, There's a chumash to shake lulav again a second time. This special din, lulav nitol b'amigdash kol shiva. Lulav nitol b'amigdash kol shiva. It's even on the first day? There's a special mitzvah to shake a lulav in the Beis HaMikdash? Or you say, no, the first day is the first day. That's all over the world. There's a mitzvah to shake a lulav the first day. The special added mitzvah in Mikdash is only the remaining days of Sukkot, the next 6 days. So he said that one of the Talmidim asked this to Rav Dovah the Soloveitchik, so he thought for a few moments, and he said, I don't know, it's a good shaila. He doesn't have any rhymes. So he commented, Rabbi Gerelik was telling us after 1948. So he was telling us, look, no one ever dreamt there's going to be a Medina. And somebody raised this question. Rav Elvela didn't know what the answer was. Interesting that people were dreaming about these kind of things. You know, there are three fat volumes of a Sefer HaMitzvos L'Rav Sadia Gaon that was put up by Rabbi Yeruchim Perlo. Rav Sadia Gaon apparently wrote a poem, that piyut. Many of the Rishonim, many of the Gaonim wrote the piyutim, which contain all of the Taryag Mitzvahs. Some of them were intended to be recited in the middle of Kriyas HaTorah on Shavuos. When they read the Aseres HaDibros, so they would recite piyutim that listed off all the Taryag Mitzvahs in the order of the Aseres HaDibros. So Rav Sadia Gaon also wrote such a poem. And Rabbi Yeruchim Perla wrote a whole three fat volumes to figure out exactly which are the 613 mitzvahs according to Rav Sadia Gaon based on the poem, and what his sheet is. How did he decide that these count and those don't count? So the whole poem is in Gansan 2 pages long. Not such a long poem. But he has one line of the poem, and then he has 10 pages to explain. Then he has one line, he has 10 pages. 10 pages for every line. Comes out to be three fat, the size of Baba Basra. Three Baba Basra volumes on the Sefer Mitzvah of Sadia Gaon. So Rabbi Yeruchim Perla, he was a businessman. Rabbi Yeruchim Perla was a businessman. He was not a professional rabbi. There are a lot of businessmen who are bigger Talmidei Chacham than the rabbis. Rabbi Nachum Zemer was also a businessman most of his life. Chayyadin was a businessman. A lot of the big Gdolim in all the generations were. Beis Ephraim was a businessman. He was also not a rabbi. So Rabbi Yeruchim Perla claims, he raises this issue also, and he thinks that he has the machlokes harishonim about this. Whether the first day of Sukkot also has a special mitzvah of Mikdash, if you shook the lulav outside of Yerushalayim, and you came into the Beis HaMikdash, you came into Yerushalayim, would there be a mitzvah to shake again or not? Halacha lemaisa, we assume the first day Sukkot is deraisa, you need shalachem, and the rest of Sukkot is only midirabbanan. In America, we're in America, so it's takanas rabbeichem and zakai. So the Gemara said, for sure you don't need shalachem. What about Yom Tov Sheni Shel Golias? What about the second day of Sukkot? So the Pashta says, we usually assume that the second day is a Sveka D'Yoma, so whatever dinim apply in the first day should apply in the second day. So here, the Ritva has a Machlokes HaRishonim. Do you need shalachem on the second day on Yom Tov Sheni Shel Sukkot? Of course you should need shalachem. Why should anybody think the Shulchan Aruch paskens that you need shalachem? Mechaber writes that the second day Yom Tov, those who observe, Chabad lived in Svat in Eretz Yisrael in the 1500s, but he says those who live in Chutz Lartz, those who observe 2 days Yontif, have to be medaktik on the second day, and all of the dinim that apply the first day, and you need shalachem. So the Mishnah Berurah quotes the Bikur Yankiv. He always quotes in this area the Bikur Yankiv. So the Bikur Yankiv points out that if you look in the Ritva, this is really a machlokes harishonim, and Balabatim a lot of times are not medaktik about this. They think that all the dinim, special dinim, only apply the first day. They don't realize it applies the second day. Well, so here there's enough in the Mechaber says that the dinim do apply, even the second day. Why should anybody think that the Yom Tov Sheni Shel Sukkot is not a Sveka D'Yoma? Why should someone think that you don't need Shalachem on the second day? So Rav Soloveitchik suggested the following pshat, a historical pshat. The question is, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai made a takana that you should shake the lulav all 7 days. That was after the Churban Bayis Sheni. Mishachar Beis Hamikdash, Hiskin Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, Shehei Lulav Nito Kol Shiva. So Lamaisa is shaking the lulav every day anyway. So when did they introduce the Yom Tov Sheni Shel Golias that we observe today? That was way later. That was after the days of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Because for many centuries, from the days of Moshe Rabbeinu till the days of Hillel HaSheni, they used to do Kiddush HaChodesh Al Pi Hariyah. They had to wait till witnesses came, and the Bezin would be in Kaddish the Chodesh, and then there would be an institution of Sveka the Yoima. They would observe 2 days Yontif. But then in the days, during the lifetime of Abai Verava lived in Bovel, but during their lifetime, the Nasi in Eretz was Hillel HaSheni, a descendant of Rabbi Yudah Nasi. So he made a takana, he set the calendar, he fixed the calendar the way we have it today. So then the Chachamim, the Rabbanim in Bavel, sent a Shaila to Hillel Sheni. Should we still observe Yontov Sheni Shel Galus? It doesn't make any sense. There's no more Sveika D'Yayim. We have calendars printed centuries in advance. So what's the Sveika D'Yayim all about? So that's when Sholchem Itam, they sent a letter from Eretz Yisrael to Chutz La'aretz. Izar b'minig avasechem yedech. That's the Gemara, the beginning of Beit. So we should still continue to observe Yontov Sheni Shel Galus. So our observance of Yontov Sheni today is not... When did Yontov Sheni Shel Galus start? That's a historical question. So the Goyim say it started in the days of Yeshua ben Nun, when Reuben and Gad and Chatzis Shevet HaManasseh finished fighting the wars after the Shevet Shekapshu. So then they're going to divide Eretz Yisrael. So Yeshua ben Nun bid them farewell. They're going back home to their wives and their children in Eber HaYarden, and he said goodbye and good luck. Don't forget to keep Yontov Sheni Shel Galus, because you're never going to go. You're never going to know when Rosh Chodesh was. You never know when Yontov was. So according to the Tshuva Saganim, it began in the days of Yeshua ben Nun. If it's not so, so it began sometime later. But it began before the Churban HaBayis. They had Yontov Sheni Shel Galus b'zman shebeis hamikdash hayikayim. So this Yontov Sheni, the original institution of Yontov Sheni, was b'zman shekidshu al pi ariya. But then it came a time that no more kiddush al chodesh al pi ariya. So today the observance of Yontov Sheni is not really based on the original practice. It's a new takana in the days of Hillel HaSheni. So that's why there's room to argue the point and say that Hillel HaSheni only instituted Yontov Sheni Shel Galus, let's say, not to do malacha on the second day Sukkos. Sveika D'Yayma said, don't do malacha. Yizor b'minig avasechem yedechem. But he should institute Yontov Sheni, you should need shalachem for the lulav on the second day. You have to shake a lulav all 7 days anyway. Mitam takana sabechem ezakah. So even if you wouldn't make a takana of Yontov Sheni for the purpose of lulav, you have to shake a lulav anyway. Hiskin Rabbechem and Zakai. So since the takanas Rabbechem and Zakai preceded the takana of Hillel HaSheni to observe Yontov Sheni, so maybe that's one opinion in the Ritva holds. Maybe they never made the takanas Yontov Sheni Shel Galus with respect to Netilos lulav, because it wasn't necessary. Ben Kavako, they're going to be shaking a lulav all 7 days. Ayachaptan Afkamina. If you only shake the lulav because of takanas Rabbechem and Zakai, then you don't need shalachem. And if you shake the lulav because of Sveika D'Yayma, then you do need shalachem. So that's not so necessary. It's not important to institute the Yontov Sheni to require that it should be shalachem. You're going to shake the lulav anyway. So that's perhaps the argument that the other opinion holds. But Halacha L'maaseh, that's not the opinion that's accepted. In the Shulchan Aruch, the Psak HaMekubal is that on the second day of Sukkos, you do need shalachem. No, I don't think anybody says you're mechuyif to go to Yishlam Shabbos. If someone did go, so then the Bikur Yankov suggests it's kedai to be machmir to shake again a second time. The Mishnah gives us the minimum size of length of the Hadassim and the Aravis and the Lulav. So the Mishnah says that the Hadassim and the Aravis have to have a minimum of length of 3 Tvachim, and the Lulav has to be 3 Tvachim plus Kedela Naneabo, in addition, of Tefach has to be 4 Tvachim tall. So the simple pshat in the Mishnah is that Kedela Nanea, this is a Din Deraisa. So you see the Dinyan of Nanuim, that's what the Rishonim and Achrayim point out. It would appear from the Mishnah that the inyan of Nanuim to shake the lulav and the yestrig, to do Nanuim with it, that's why you need the extra tefach, that it should be noticeable, it should be conspicuous that they're doing Nanuim with the lulav. It would appear that that's an inyan deraisa. The Gemara says, Merag bei nafik bei. Once you pick up the dalamidim, and if you didn't do Nanuim, he eats a bit of it without Nanuim, but it is a lechatchila deraisa. Taisis points out in the end of Maseches Nidah that we do have dinim lachatchila derais in the area of mitzvahs. In Issa v'heter, it doesn't make sense to have a lachatchila derais. Lachatchila, you're not allowed to eat it, but you're not allowed to do it, but b'di'ebed it's mutter. If it's mutter b'di'ebed, it's mutter lachatchila. But with respect to mitzvahs, you say a mitzvah b'shleimusa should be done like this, and if you do it without that, so the mitzvah is only shalom b'shleimusa. So here's a question. What nanuim? Netilas lulav, when you shake the lulav in the morning, so you do nanuim right away. What about the nanuim and the halal? The nanuim b'shas halal is also connected with the mitzvah netilas lulav, but that's a different mitzvah. Nanuim halal is a different mitzvah. So by Hasidim, they tell a lot of famous stories about Chassidish Rebbes, that they were so eager, by Rav Levi Yitzchak Berditcheva and others, they were so excited about shaking the lulav, they woke up early in the morning, the Mishnah says, L'chatchila, you shouldn't shake a lulav before Hanetz Achama. Even though b'diyevet, if you fulfill the mitzvah after Los Hashach is way before sunrise, b'diyevet, you would be yotzei, but l'chatchila, it's not proper to perform the mitzvah before Hanetz Achama. So let's say, so they tell stories about the Rebbes, the Tzaddikim, they're waiting, they're washing Tilus Adam, they're waiting to shake the lulav, and then right away, right after sunrise, they would say the Baruch and shake the lulav. They weren't holding by davening, the minyan was going to be later. So they were going to say halal, later they were going to put down the lulav in the Esrig and daven Shachris, and after Shachris, they were going to do the Nanuim in the middle of halal. The Brisker Amakbid, based on a Rambam, that would appear that the Nanuim in the middle of halal are not stam a separate mitzvah to do nanuim in the middle of halal. The nanuim that the Mishnah says lachatchila, that the hadasim and arabas have to be 3 tvachim and the lulav has to be an additional tefach kedei lananebo, 4 tvachim, so you need lachatchila ninua. So that ninua is referring to the nanua of the dalad minim in the middle of the halal. So if you're going to shake a lulav in the morning and just do nanuim, then you could have put it down, and then you're going to dam shachris, then you're going to pick up the lulav in the asrig again, then you go to nanuim, do the nanuim in the middle of halal. So once you put down the lulav in the esrog, so there's room to argue. There's room to argue back, not so, but there's room to argue the point and say that you're not yotzei the hidur lachatchila over here, because when you pick up the dalad minim, you have to do the nanuim in the middle of halal right away. If you put it down and you didn't do nanuim in the halal, so maybe the fact that you put it down causes that the nanuim you're going to do later, 2 hours later in the middle of halal, won't be mitzvah to the original netila, so you won't be yotzei the mitzvah b'shleimus. So that's why there are those who are insistent, those who are non-Chassidim. The Chassidim shake the lulav in the sukkah. They shake the lulav in the sukkah. That's from the Mekubalim, from the Arizal. The Mishnah Berurah writes, Mishnah Berurah writes, what it probably means is that the man sleeps in the sukkah. So when he wakes up in the morning, washes Negavasa, the first thing he does in the morning is to shake the lulav in the sukkah. Not that he sleeps in the house and then he walks into the sukkah. Why should he walk into the sukkah to shake the lulav? Mishnah Berurah writes, "B'tamimus." Of course, the person is sleeping in the sukkah. So the first thing in the morning, he's not going to daven shachris in the sukkah. He's going to daven shachris in shul. So obviously, these the Arizal with these mekubalim with the chassidim, they're shaking the lulav in the sukkah the first thing before they get out of their pajamas. They just wash negelah, so they shake the lulav first thing after Hanetz Achama. Now later, they're gonna go to shul. And they're gonna shake the lulav in the middle of the halal. So they obviously don't hold from this briska chumrah. But there are many many Talmid Chachamim who will insist dafke on not shaking the lulav until you're holding after shachris, right before halal, so they won't have to put down the lulav in the esrog before continuing to do the nanuim in the middle of halal. Sometimes they're going to have to put it down in order to mish the page in the siddur, so then they haven't accomplished anything. So they could have done it ready. They could have shaken the lulav when they woke up in the morning. Could have done like the Hasidim. But if they want to fulfill this hiddur, so they should hold on, they should have the place in the siddur ready by the halal, and then they should hold on to the dalminim, say the brach and do the nanuim, and then continue to recite halal without putting down the dalminim, and continue to do the nanuim in the middle of halal as a hemshech of the original netilas lulav. The Gemara says in beginning of Psochim, Dav Zayin, Kol HaMitzvahs Kulam Mevarach Aleim Moiv Al Asiyosom. Whenever you're about to perform a mitzvah, you should recite the brach immediately before fulfilling the mitzvah. The Gemara says, Oiv Al Asiyosom. Oiv doesn't say Kodem, so the Rishonim say Oiv has the connotation of Oiv V'loi Oiv the Oiv. Kodem means sometime before. Oiv means immediately before. So the Gemara says there's an exception to the rule. A few exceptions to the rule. The Gemara says Dalad Minim is an exception to the rule because there's no way to fulfill Oivah Lasiyos. What is going to say the bracha before he picks up the Dalad Minim? So that's Oivah the Oivah. So once he picks it up, even though he didn't do the Nanuim yet, it's already Lachar Asiyos Miragbe Nafikbe. That's what it says in the Gemara. So the Balei HaTosfos came up with an Einfal. They outsmarted the Gemara. The Balei HaTosfos came up with an Einfal. No, he pick up all the Dalad Minim and pick it up upside down. But the Gemara says you're only yotzei the mitzvah if you hold the kederach gedilosam, the same way it grows from the ground. So the Gemara says in Sukkah, if you hold it upside down, that's the pasha b'shar hafocha, if you hold it upside down, so the Gemara says you're not yotzei. So that's what Taisa says, hold the lulav straight, and then hold the esrog upside down. The lulav upside down, that's a little harder to twist around. But the esrog upside down, that's easier. So hold the lulav and the esrig, and hold the esrig upside down. And then recite the bracha, then turn it up. So that's mamish oivel asiyasa. That's wonderful. Others have the practice. The Gemara says that you should hold the lulav in the right hand and the esrig in the left hand, because the lulav has the lulav, the hadasim and the arabs, you have three quarters of the mitzvah, and the esrig is only one quarter of the mitzvah. So if a person is a righty, so you always hold the dovah shal mitzvah in the right hand. So here the two dvarim shal mitzvah, they hold the lulav in the right hand, the esrig in the left hand. So the Rabbein Hanan, the Magen Avraham quotes from the Rabbein Hanan, all printed on the side of the Vilna Shas, that if hafacha lo yotza, doesn't mean you held it upside down. Hafacha means if you held the lulav in the left hand and you held the esrog in the right hand, that you're not yotze b'dievet. So some svardim have such a practice that they'll hold on to the lulav and the esrog in the wrong direction. They'll hold the esrog in the right hand, the lulav in the left hand, then they'll say the bracha, then they'll switch hands. That's hafacha, like the Ashkenazim hold it with the pitim down, then they turn it up with the pitim up. Some svardim hold it in the wrong hand. So the Balamor has a comment on this, or some Rishonim say, hold everything straight, but just have in mind not to be yotze the mitzvah. Have kavanah shelo lotzis. And we paskin that even if mitzvahs ain't tzrichas kavanah, but if you have kavanah shelo lotzis, then you're not yotze. So that's what other Rishonim, the three different yotzes, had to outsmart the Gemara. The Gemara says there's no way to recite the bracha or las yasam. It's going to be over the over, and once you hold it already, so it's ready. Lachar asiyasim. So there's no breira. So the Gemara says m'sochim. So b'leis breira. So you recite the bracha. Lachar asiyasim. See here, the Balei Tosfos came up with three solutions how to outsmart the Gemara. Either you have kavanah shelo lotzis till after you say the bracha, or you have the lulav you have the esrog upside down, or you have it in a switch to hands. Whatever you figure out in eight. So the Balamor has a comment on the first parak m'sochim. Why do I have to outsmart the Gemara? The Gemara says you say the bracha lachar asiyasim, say leave it like that. He doesn't see why we have to figure out the bigger chachmas than the Gemara.
You do them all? Is it good to do them all?
You can do them all? Okay. The Beis Yosef quotes from the Sefer Or Chaim, that's one of the Rishonim, that the Gemara speaks of holding the lulav in the right hand and the esrog in the left hand. And then the Shulchan Aruch has a machlokes, what if a person is a lefty? Should he switch hands? Should he hold the lulav in the left hand and the esrog in the right hand? Or do you say no? Even if you're a lefty, you should hold the lulav in the right hand. So what's the big deal? The whole thing is not li'kuvah. So the Magen Avraham says no, but the Rabbein Hanan learns that it is li'kuvah. The Gemara says hafochai, and he says it's his switched hands. So that's why the minig is that lefties first do the netilas lulav with the lulav in the left hand, and then they shake again with the lulav held in the right hand. If you're righty, life is easier. So the Beis Yosef quotes in the name of the Or Chaim, what if a person wants to hold the lulav and the esrog in the right hand? He wants to hold the machzor in the left hand, especially when it goes hoshainus, when they're saying halos. He wants to hold the siddur or the machzor in the left hand. He wants to hold the lulav and the esrog in the right hand. It's not good. So he quotes from the Or Chaim, the Rishon, the Yochas Chaim, the Rishon, that you're not Yotze. When the Gemara Sukkah would appear that you're not Yotze. So the Taz has a whole attack against this. He says, what are you talking about? Read in the Gemara carefully. It would seem that you are Yotze. But that's a Chumrah that many Poskim recommend. The Magen Avraham quotes it. Choshesh for this opinion of the Yochas Chaim, that you should always be careful to hold the lulav and the esrog in two different hands. So what do you talk to do when you're going Hoshainus? You got to have three hands. On the one hand, on the other hand, on the other hand. How? You got to figure something out. Remember, Rabbi Gerelik, Zechan Levracha, told us that when he learned in Brisk, by the Brisk Rav, before the war, way before the war, so there was only one lulav and esrog in the whole city. Not that every balabas had a lulav and esrog. So the chazan had the lulav and esrog. When they went hoshainus, one person was walking hoshainus. So Rabbi Velvela had a balabas walk in front of the chazan with the siddur like this, and he was walking backwards. So the chazan could hold the lulav in the right hand, the esrog in the left hand, and the balabas was holding the siddur. Today we have a problem. Everybody has a lulav and an esrog, so you don't have a shamas for each person to hold. So you got to figure something out. Or let's say when you say halel, so if you're going to hold the lulav in the right hand, the esrog in the left hand, so where's the machzor going to be? You got a problem. So you got to try to give zechanetz the lechatchilah to satisfy this opinion. Then in the Shulchan Aruch they quote the dream that the Rakanti had. Rakanti was one of the late Rishonim with Kabbalah, always with Kabbalah. So he had a dream, he had a guest for the first days of Sukkot, and in his dream on the first night of Sukkot, I don't know if he was sleeping in the sukkah, sleeping out of the sukkah. He doesn't discuss where he was sleeping. He had a dream that his guest was writing Shem Hashem Yud Kei Vav. Cain is writing Yud Kei Vav, and he writes the hay all the way over there. A big hafsokah. So I screamed at him in the dream, and I said, what are you doing? You're supposed to write Yud Kei Vav Kei together. He said, that's the way we do where I come from. So I told him, no, you're doing wrong. You have to write Yud Kei Vav Kei together. And he woke up, and he didn't understand what the dream is all about until it came time to daven. Then they were davening the first day sukkahs. So this guest that he had, he tells you his name, never heard of him, says this fellow, he held the lulav in the right hand, esrog in the left hand, and they were far apart from each other. So the Rakanti said, now I understand that the dalad mina represent the yud kei vav kei, and since he held the esrog over here, so that's the interpretation of the dream, that it was marchik, the second hay from the letters yud kei vav, and based on the dream, it's quoted in Shulchan Aruch, he's supposed to hold the lulav and the esrog together. We also hold the lulav in the right hand, last week in the left hand, but they should be near each other. They shouldn't be far apart like this. Sometimes people hold them apart. So the Shulchan Aruch quotes this from the Beis Yosef B'Shem Harakanti that's not proper. You should hold them near each other. Sometimes people are not sure whether their esrog is murkav or not. So you get another esrog, but then the other esrog, you're also not too sure. Let's say one esrog is prettier than the other, but the one that's not so pretty is the one that's vade kosher. And the one that's pretty, that's the one that has the suffix murkav. So they tell over in the name of Rab Chaim Soloveitchik that he had such a situation, that he had two esrogim. One was muhuder in the suffix kosher, and the one that was vade kosher wasn't so muhuder, wasn't so beautiful, didn't look so good. So the shaila was, which order should he? So first he's going to say the brach and do it until the salulim. Then he's going to put down the esrog and take the second esrog. Says the renik paid, which esrog should he take first? So they say the name of Rab Chaim that he insisted on taking the safek kosher vaday muhuder first, because he's going to take the vaday kosher non muhuder first. So then you yotze the mitzvah ready. If it's vaday kosher, you yotze the mitzvah. Shalom b'shalimusa, not so pretty. So you're not yotze the inyan of hidden mitzvah. Once you're ready, yotze the mitzvah, so then it's not going to help to pick up the muhudah dike esrog that may or may not be kosher. Once you're yotze the mitzvah, you can't accomplish hidden mitzvah. So he felt that it's preferable if you have two esrogim and you're going to pick up one after the other, b'zach hazeh, so it's preferable to say the bracha and pick up the one that's safek kosher vaday muhudah. And the poskim point out that there's a Rashi in Maseches Erevin who talks about such a similar case. Rashi writes punk the reverse, not like Rab Chaim. Okay. Rashi is also entitled to his opinion. For sure. That's the Shaila Hepsik. If you're picking up first the one that's Safek Kosher, isn't that a Hepsik? So it should be preferable to pick up the one that's Vadei Kosher. What do you accomplish by the Safek? Okay.
Can we together?
Probably could. If you have there's enough room, hold everything at the same time. Yeah. Why? Tosef says only if you take an extra min. Ah. Okay, no, but if you do misafik. No, if you do misafik, yeah, that's not about Tosef. Whenever you do something misafik, that's not considered about Tosef.
What Nikud is Rashi arguing on the fact that you could be Yotze Hidr even a second time, or on this?
Rashi, I don't think he's talking about Hidr. Rashi talks if you have one is a Vade, one is a Safek. So he talks about Hepsik, I think. I think Rashi raised the issue of Hepsik.
It's not considered a Hepsik if you do the Safek.
You should do the Vade first. Rab Chaim felt you do the Safek first. So Rashi holds that's a Shaila of Hepsik. It's preferable to do the Vade first. Vade mitzvah first. In the Shulchan Aruch, they quote from Rav Sadia Goen that the common practice is, it's not Makibin, yeah, but the Gemara says, but Agbe Nafek Be. To pick up the lulav yotze, even if you weren't so medactic about it. But in the Shulchan Aruch, they quote from Asadi going that you should hold the shedra of the lulav towards your face, based on the pasuk Varisa Sachorai. But somehow the lulav represents the Rabbanu Shel Olam, so we're looking at the Rabbanu Shel Olam from behind, from the back. Varisa Sachorai. There is a machlekes hatanoim in the Mishnah in Sukkah. How many arabas do you need? How many hadasim? So Rabbi Akiva is of the opinion one and one. One lulav, one esrog, one hadas, and one arova. We don't follow that opinion. We follow Rab Tarfin's opinion, the other Tana. Rab Tarfin backed out. The Gemara says, okay, so we follow whoever the other Tana is, we follow the other opinion. that you need three hadasim and two arovas. How did we come to that conclusion, three hadasim and two arovas? Because it says arvei nachal in the plural, samir rabbi mishnai. And hadasim, why do you say that you need three hadasim? Because it says hanaf eitz ovis, three words, so you add up the three words, that's a drosha deraisa, you add up the three words. Like the Gemara says, how do you know that there are 39 ovis malachas? Because if you look in Chumash from the beginning of Bereshit to the end of any Kol Yisrael, the word malacha, malachta, malachas appears 39 times. Or how do you know how many zrikas to make on a korban chata? So the Gemara says, you add up how many times it says karnas, karnas, karnos. So that's not a balaturim. That's from the Midrash HaTar and the Dreshes. That's a drosha Gemara deraisa. So one Tana insists that you have to have three hadasim. So l'chatchilu we certainly hold like that, you have to have three. Where do you put the three hadasim? So some mekubalim say you put one on the right, one on the left, one in the middle. That's from mekubalim. The normal, for you and me and everybody else, the normal way is you put the three hadasim on the right side, put the two arovas on the left side, and the lulav in the middle, v'risa sacharai. Yeah. If you had it all backwards, you also yotze b'diyeved, but this is the minig l'chatchilu. They quote the Tshuvas, they quote from Rashi, the Talmidim of Rashi quote, you have to be careful to see to it that the Hadassim have to be taller than they are, higher up than the Arovas. Usually the Arovas are much taller than the Hadassim. So usually if you tie everything up together on the bottom, so the Arovas are going to be much higher than the Hadassim. So Rashi says that you're not Yotze B'dieved. That's very hard to understand. You're not Yotze. We don't have this Rashi in the Gemara, in Pirush Rashi on the Gemara. The Talmidim of Rashi, the Sefer HaPardes, they quote in the name of Rashi, that if you held the Gimel Minim in such a way that the Arovas are taller than the Hadassim, say not Yotze B'dieved. Why should it be so? It's a deep dark secret. Nobody knows why. So the Maharsham wrote Heoris on the Sefer Chaim of Rochel and Mishmeres Shalom. There was a Poisik in Europe who wrote a Chibur, Mishmeres Shalom. Mishmeres Shalom is a commentary on the Prima Godim on Yeridei. Nobody learns Prima Godim anymore, so what are you going to look in the commentary for? But so the same author who wrote the commentary on the Prima Godim wrote also Svarim, two Svarim, Chaim of Rochel and Mishmeres Shalom. He wrote all of Hilchos Avelos alphabetically arranged. And that's wonderful. Everybody gamers from that. Everybody writes the Shtibur Perot. They all gamba his Mar Mekaymus. He has Mar Mekaymus, Rishonim, Achronim, and everything. And he also has the Sefer Chaim of Rochel and Mishmeres Shalom and Hilchos Dalad Minim. And he has in the Sefer, on the Dalad Minim, he has every so often Heoris from the Maharsham. They were contemporaries. The beginning of the 1900s. So the Maharsham wrote Heoris there. So the Maharsham has a Heora on this that he quotes in the name of Rashi, the Talmidim of Rashi, quote the name of Rashi. If the Arovas are taller than the Hadassim, you're not Yotze B'dieved. It doesn't make any sense. The Beleis, because of a lack of a better suggestion, he says that maybe the Arovas represent Bali Avera and the Hadassim represent Tzadikim. The Arovas represent Bali Avera. The Medrash says that the Arovas aim behem lay tam v'lay reyach. The lulav grows on a date tree. So the lulav has tam. The pears that grow on the lulav tree taste good. The Arovas does nothing to eat, but it smells good. And the esrog smells good and it tastes good. So the esrog represents the tzaddik who has tam and reyach. And the hadasim and the lulav represent hef tzaddikim. One has Torah without mitzvah, one has mitzvah without Torah. And the arovis, it sounds like it represents the rishoyim. That's what it sounds like. So maybe that's what the Maharsham suggests. He doesn't know any better pshat. Why should Rashi hold that even b'dieved you're not yetz? So maybe still insufficient reason. Maybe because if you have the Arovas taller than the Hadassim, you're having the Rishoyim are having a Shlita over the Tzaddikim. No. So whatever the explanation is, we don't understand, but Rashi says you have to try to be careful about that. He says you're not Yotze even B'dieved. The Mishnah says, we mentioned the Mishnah before, that you have to have the Arovas and the Hadassim should be a minimum of three Tvachim tall, and the Lulav has to be a minimum of a fourth tefachim tall, gimel tefachim mechuvin keneged the hadasim narovis, and an extra tefach kedela nanea above it. So in Shulchan Aruch they quote from the Ran on the Rif, on the side of the Rif on that Gemara, that however tall your hadasim and narovis are, the lulav has to be a tefach taller. So if you usually a lot of times you have a short lulav and tall hadasim and narovis. So if your hadasim and narovis are very tall, so you have to see to it that the lulav should protrude a tefach above that. And then the Ran adds on, based on the Gemara, it's not sufficient if the lulav protrudes a tefach above, you have to have the shedra of the lulav. Shedra of the lulav, the hard part, doesn't go all the way up to the top. When you come to the top, it's already regular alim in the middle. So it goes till around 4 or 5 inches from the top, and then the shedra disappears, and you just have alim, you just have leaves of the lulav. So you have to have the shedra of the lulav should protrude at tefach above the top of the hadassim, and the top of the hadassim should be slightly above the top of the arovas. Usually what you have to do is snip off the bottom of the hadassim and arovas. Make sure you don't snip off the top. If you snip off the top, so it's a shayla pasling the whole arovas and hadassim. And make sure you snip off on the bottom. Then the Mishnah records a machlekes Rabbi Yehuda and Chachamim whether lulav tzarachegel, lulav ain't tzarachegel. The Gemara has a lot, the Mishnah has a little bit, the Gemara has a lot. Rabbi Yehuda's opinion is that if you don't tie together the hadassim and the arovas, but the lulav, so you're not having yotze liikuva, lulav tzarachegel, and we don't accept Rabbi Yehuda's opinion. We paskin lechatchila because of zakeli anvel, you have to have eged, but b'dieved it's not liikuva. So the Rashi points out on the Gemara. The Gemara is beferish, black and white, and according to Rabbi Yehuda, that lulav tzarach eged, it's not sufficient if you wrap around, if you wrap something around and you tuck it in. You have to have a keshal gabi keshal, you have to have a keshal shal kayama holding together the hadassim and arabas with the lulav. The question is, that's only within Rabbi Yehuda's shita. What about within the Rabbanan? We pass on lulav eged tzarach eged, the whole need for the eged is only l'chatchila mishum zakel man veyu. So do we insist also on having a keshal gabi keshal? So that's what Rashi writes on the Gemara Suki, yes, the lechatchila of the Chachamim is what Rabbi Yehuda holds b'dieved. Just like according to Rabbi Yehuda, the Gemara is beferish that you need a kesher gabi kesher, so to according to the Chachamim, lechatchila you need a kesher gabi kesher. So what if a person forgot to tie up his lulav and estrig? He forgot to tie up the lulav, you don't tie the estrig up. You tie up the lulav with the hadassim, no, he forgot to tie it up on Erev Yontif. So you can't tie, make a kesher gabi kesher on Yontif, that's a malacha. So then you have no choice. So that's when the Shulchan Aruch quotes, if you forgot to tie it up on Erev Yontif, so then you just wrap around with a piece of the lulav and you tuck it in. But more correct is that you shouldn't just do like that. You should tie it before Yontif with a kesher gomer or kesher gabi kesher. And that's in connection with this sif in Shulchan Aruch. The Mishnah Berurah quotes from the Tshuvas Agura Bahalecha. He quotes exotic, once in a while he quotes some exotic sefer. So over here he quotes the sefer Agura Bahalecha, that if you have the keshikol the way we have, it's woven pieces of lulav that are all knotted together. It's all woven together, so that has the status of a keshal gabi keshal. So then you yotze say this requirement if you use such a container. Some are makbid, they don't want to use that container, but he says those who use that container, so that is a keshal gabi keshal. So you don't have to worry about the fact if you're just going to wrap something around and tuck it in. That's not a problem, because the keshagol itself is a keshal gabi kesh. On the very first daf in Sukkah, the Gemara talks about Heleni Hamalka had a lot of sons, young children, before Bar Mitzvah. They grew up later on. The Gemara says she had them all eat and sleep in the sukkah, mitam chinuch, and the sukkah had to be kosher. The Gemara says you're not yotze the din achinuch if you have your children sleeping in a pasul of sukkah. So that's where the Ritva points out on that Gemara, and this is quoted in Shulchan Aruch, that when you have little children, you want to buy them a lulav and an esrog, you can't just buy a chinuch set. You can't just buy a pasul of lulav and a pasul of esrog, because the kid is a cotton anyway, it doesn't make a difference. It has to be kosher a lulav and esrog, just like it has to be a kosher Sukkah. The question is, in Shulchan Aruch, the Mishnah Berurah quotes two opinions. What about Shalachem? Do we insist that it has to be Shalachem also? What if I have a kosher lulav and esrog, but I'll give it to the child, I'll give it to my son, and I don't want him to be kainah? I have in mind I'm not being mak. I don't tell him anything about it. He doesn't understand yet kinyonim. So is that good mitam chinuch? Am I yoitza the din of chinuch if I'm not makna to the child on the first day of Sukkah? So that's a machlokes. The Mishnah Berurah quotes a machlokes haposkim about that. Moshe Feinstein has a whole tshuva about that, a very fascinating tshuva, where he explains that the yisoid of the machlokes, he has a tshuva about co-education in younger classes. Is there anything wrong with having a first grade, second grade, when the children have mixed classes together? So he says the little children don't have any yetzer hara for each other. They don't understand what this is all about yet. But he says that's the machlokes over here, where they need shalachem. But why? What does that have to do with the shalachem? So he says the shaila is, what's the nature of the din of chinuch? Is it that you want the child to have a kiyum now? So it has to be shalachem. If it's not shalachem, there's no kiyum mitzvah now. So if that's the whole idea of chinuch, so then there's a machlokes whether there's chinuch by losesin or only by esin. So half of the Rishonim say there's only chinuch by mitzvah seser. There's no chinuch by mitzvah sloy seser, because the Gemara says that kot nech on the velus, they ain't bezim mitzvah and hafrish. So they say that shows that there's only chinuch on mitzvah, there's no chinuch on averus. So the and other Rishonim disagree that Gemara kot nech on the velus ain't bezim mitzvah and hafrish means bezim is not mechuyev. The din of chinuch is only on the parents. There's no din of chinuch on strangers. And the other Rishonim say it's not true. The din of chinuch is on everybody, but the din of chinuch only applies on mitzvahs. Doesn't apply in Isur. So if one should assume that the din of chinuch only applies to mitzvahs, so then what it means is you want the child to have a kiyum on mitzvahs and ain't a mitzvah v'yoseh, then it has to be shalachem. So if you hold that that's the nature of the din of chinuch, you want to have a kiyum on mitzvah, so then if you're going to talk about chinuch on a loiseh, say, you don't want when the children are older, the boys and the girls should attend the mixed school because they're going to have hirurim for each other. They're going to be violating Isurim before they're bar mitzvah, because they're going to have hirurim, the boys about the girls and the girls about the boys. But in first grade, second grade, they're not having any hirurim. So if you should say, so if you need shalachem over here, it means that the nature of chinuch is that you want the child should have a kiyum mitzvah. So then he thinks that there's no problem having mixed grades if you're machmer over here that you need shalachem, then you can be mekel over there that you can have mixed classes in the early grades. But if you should assume over here that you don't need shalachem, that the idea of chinuch is doesn't mean that you want the child to have a kiyum now. You want to train the child that he should do it right later. So no, we don't explain anything about the shalachem. You have to give him a kosher lulav and an esrig, but you don't have to see to it that he should have a kiyum on mitzvah. You just want to train him so that later, after he becomes bar mitzvah, he should have the kiyum on mitzvah. So then our Moshe says, if the idea of a chinuch is to train him now for later, so then maybe you shouldn't allow even mixed classes in the first grade. But our Moshe thinks that mikar adin, we do need shalachem, and therefore he thinks mikar adin, you can't have the mixed classes in the early grades. That's his suggestion as far as the machlekes harishon. In Shulchan Aruch they quote the din in the Gemara that if the pitim fell off, if you have an esrog that grows without a pitim, so then it's kosher. But if it grew with a pitim and the pitim broke off later, so that's pasul. So there's a machlekes. The Magen Avraham has a machlekes with the Mishnah Berurah quotes. What is the nature of the psul? If the pitim fell off, what is the nature of the psul? So some Rishonim say it's possible because of chaser. Let's say if you have an esrog and you cut out a bit of the esrog. So for the last days of Sukkot, chaser is good. But for the first 2 days, you need lekicha tamu. Lekachtem lekicha tamu. It has to be a complete esrog. You shouldn't be missing anything. So some Rishonim say that if the pitim is missing, it's no good because of chaser. If it's no good because of chaser, then it will be kosher the rest of the days of Sukkot. But if you say that the reason why nitla hapitim is no good is because of hadar, a lack of hadar, that's what some Rishonim say. So then we paskin in Shulchan Aruch, the Rama paskins like Tosfos, that if you have dalin minim that are lacking hadar, so it's possible called shiva. It's not only possible mechaber paskin like the Rambam, that a lack of hadar only passes on the first day. And the Rama paskins like the Balei Tosfos, that a lack of hadar passes all the days. So if you put together the two chumris, that hadar pasul's called shiva, and if nitla hapitim is pasul because of hadar, the Mishnah Berurah raises this issue. So it could be that if the pitim falls off, it'll be pasul called shiva. Yeah, so that's why many, when you have little babies, I don't have any babies anymore, but for quite a few years we had little babies. When you have little babies, they're always going to break the pitim. They're always going to break the pitim. It's not shy. They're going to drop the esrog. So it's a recommendation when you'll all be blessed with little baby. Well, so make sure that you buy esrog without a pitim. So they can't possibly, even if they try. The Mishnah says that an esrog that's green is pasul. So the Gemara has a whole discussion. Magen Avraham quotes, the Gemara has a whole discussion. What's wrong with the esrog that's green? So one suggestion the Gemara has is that it's a lack of hadar. A pretty looking esrog is yellow. But if it's green, it's not hadar. And then the Gemara has a suggestion, maybe it's not a lack. That's how the Gemara starts off. Then the Gemara, the question, does the Gemara come to the conclusion that it's not so, or the Gemara is just matche? Maybe it's not so. So the question is, this the maskonas ha-Gemara? Is this a dchiya? Gemara says, maybe it's not because of hadar. Maybe a green esrog is possible because it's not fully ripe. So that's what the Magen Avraham quotes, the machlekes, the maril, with the bach, a big machlekes ha-poskim. What if the esrog is green, mamish green like grass, but it's starting to turn yellow? So it's starting to turn yellow, so obviously it did grow sufficiently on the tree. It's just that it's not going to grow anymore. It's detached from the tree. But it's gemar bishula b'haraya. If you leave it long enough, the whole thing is going to turn going to turn yellow. But you want to be noita lulav on Sukkos, it didn't yet turn yellow. So that's a big machlokes. So some Hasidim used to assume that this is a hidur. It's a big hidur to use dafke and esrik that's green because of the Zohar. The Zohar says you should have an esrik that's yorek. And they mistranslated. They thought that the word yorek means green. So the Mishkan is Yankov has a tshuva where he writes that yorek kikarsi means green. Yorek alone, Taisa says, that yorek kikarsi is green. And yorek means yellow or brown or some other color that's related. So an esrik has to be yorek. Of course, an esrik has to be yellow. That's normal. Avada Nesrik has to be Yorik. This is a famous tshuva of the Mishkan Yankov attacking the Hasidim. The Mishkan Yankov was the Rav in Karlin. They had a lot of Karlin and Hasidim. Stalin and Hasidim. Stalin and Karlin are twin cities. They're right next to each other. I think they're on two sides of the river or something. So he has quite a few tshuvas where he disagrees with Hasidish practices. This tshuva, by mistake, was incorporated into the tshuvas of Rav Chaim Volozhiner. After Rav Chaim Volozhiner passed away, years after, they published a collection of tshuvas of the three Rosh Yeshivim Volozhiner. It's called Chalosh Tshuvas Chut HaMeshulosh. The first section is the section that most people read, Rav Chaim Volozhiner's tshuvas. And then you have the next section is Rav Hillel was, I think, his son-in-law. Then you have Rav Lezer Itche was the married to a granddaughter. Rav Lezer Yitzchak was the Rosh Yeshiva. He said shurim during the lifetime of Rav Bitzalev Volozhiner, his son. Lezer Itche was the son-in-law of same name as his father-in-law, Rav Bitzalev Volozhiner, and he gave shurim then. And then when they appointed the Netziv, so the both of them, Rav Bitzalev Volozhiner, didn't realize that his son-in-law, the Netziv, was such a great guy, and he thought that he was a moron. And then by accident, they have the whole story written up, by accident he came across a letter that the Radal had sent his son-in-law, where the Radal praised him, such a great guy, and out there, whoa, tremendous. So that so the next day he appointed him a Rosh Yeshiva in the Yeshiva. The main Rosh Yeshiva was Rav Lezer Itche, one son-in-law, and then he appointed him as the second Rosh Yeshiva. So there were those who ma'ara that the Netziv didn't, all along the Netziv used to sit in his own quarter and learn the base Medrash, and they thought he was just a baki. They didn't think that he was a big Macharish in the Yeshivas. They weren't interested in Bekir. They were only interested in Pilpulim. So there were those who were unhappy about the appointment of the Netziv. So they had a whole din Torah, and they called the board, members of the board. The members of the board were Musmachim of the Yeshiva, alumni, Rav David Tebel, that's Nachlas David, was on the Bezdin with the other big Rabbanim. And they spoke in learning that they heard him give a shiur, and they said, this man is good to give a shiur. And the other guy, the one who made the whole tumult, they said he should not be a Rebbe in Yeshiva. So he made a competing Yeshiva. He bought the building right next to Volozhiner Yeshiva, he opened a competing Yeshiva. And he said that Mishalachim to raise money for his Yeshiva. And he insisted everybody should give money to his yeshiva, but it collapsed. After three quarters of a year, the competing yeshiva collapsed, and they were left with the netziv and the yeshiva. So the tshuva is there. Nobody ever reads the second part and the third part. Nobody ever reads the tshuvas of Rav Hillel and tshuvas of Lezer Itche. Nobody ever reads it. You only read the first third, Rav Chaim Volozhiner's tshuva. So the whole thing was put together way after his death, because they had the tshuvas from his son-in-law and the tshuvas from his. The one who married his granddaughter, Rav Lezer Itche, married the granddaughter of Chaim Volozhiner. So by mistake, they included this tshuva of the Mishkan Es Yankov about the yellow esrogim, about the green esrogim. It's word for word. It's printed in the Mishkan Es Yankov beforehand. Apparently, by mistake, they had a handwritten copy of the Mishkan Es Yankov's tshuva. It must have been on Rav Chaim Volozhiner's desk or in his cotton. And by mistake, they thought that that was a tshuva of Rav Chaim Volozhiner. But it's clearly not written by Rav Chaim Volozhiner. Look at it. Chaim Volozhiner always quotes the Daf and the Omud and the Taisus Dibra Maschel. The Mishkan of Yankov said this is a Taisus in Erevin. The fourth parak in Erevin. Go find where it is. No? And the Mishkan of Yankov always throws in the Zohars. Chaim Volozhiner never has any Zohars in there. The Nefesh HaChaim is always talking about Zohar. But in the Tshuvas, he always just talks about Gemara with Rishon and Tosfos. The Mishkan of Yankov throws in all the time Zohars from here, from there, from everywhere. So that's obvious that this is a mistake that they put it into the Tshuvas of Chaim Volozhiner. But it's a very strong tshuva, and he's very opposed to the fact that the Hasidim use the green esrogim. The din is that an esrog that was cooked, the mevushal, is not acceptable. And kovish is also ke mevushal. If you had an esrog that was soaking in water for 24 hours, we would say kovish ke mevushal. A lot of people take the lulav with the hadasim and the arovas all tied together. They want to retain its freshness, so they put it into a bucket of water. So they finish davening shachris, let's say they come home, I don't know, 9:30 in the morning, put in a bucket of water, then tomorrow morning they're going to take it at 7 o'clock in the morning. So it's not sitting, kovish ke mevushal has to sit for 24 hours straight, but the child is all the Shabbos. The Chassidim all do like that. They take the lulav and the hadassah on the rose, they put it into a bucket of water, then over Shabbos it stays there for almost 48 hours. It stays there for the whole duration of Shabbos. That's a big shaila. Do you apply kavish kemevushel to wood? Kavish kemevushel, the Gemara talks about an esrog. Esrog is a fruit. But do you say that a lulav is considered kavish kemevushel? So it's a beferish Ramban. Just the two girsis in the Ramban where they said it is good, it's no good. So that's a whole pilpum when you learn Yeridei, Hilchas Basim B'Cholov. So the Pischit Shuv on the bottom of the page quotes one version of the Ramban. And then this Techemin has a long Arichas that they said maybe a misprint, maybe it's not a misprint. They're not sure exactly what the Ramban said about this. So this is an issue that comes up every year.
How much water does that have to be?
If the bottom of the lulav and the hadassim and the rovis is soaking in the water, so the amount that's soaking is considered as if it's possible, you have to determine whether you have a kashir with the part that's above the water. Whatever is kavish, if your whole kavish kemevushel applies to wood, so then you have to say dal mehacha the bottom part and be done, whether there's a shir, hechshir, lulav and hadassim.
So you just use the paper towel. Is that also considered?
No, that's not kavish kemevushel. Kavish kemevushel has to be a liquid. Let's say... Moshe Feinstein in Europe, it was very hard for everybody to get an esrog. So Moshe Feinstein preserved an esrog, I think, for 10 years because he kept it in honey from year to year. So honey is not kavish kemevushel. Kavish kemevushel is only if it's a liquid that shakes. Honey is thick stuff, so that's not that.
You're putting water on the paper towel?
Yeah, that's not kavish. Kavish kemevushel has to be soaking in a lot of water. Some Rishonim say it sounds a little funny that lulav b'gematria is 68. I think the Rekech has this, but the Paskin quoted over here. So the lulav has to have a minimum of 68 leaves. 68 leaves means every leaf is double, so it has to have 34 leaves. We see the leaves are always double. So you have to have a minimum of 34 leaves that are really double, so it's 68. Sometimes you have a skinny malink, so sometimes the lulav won't have 68 leaves. So Lechatchidish should try to get that. Some Rishonim say that it says L'chumish Arvei Nachal. Some Rishonim claim that it's a Hidda Lechatchidish to get Arovas that grew by the water. They have so many other Hidurim that they're making a fortune selling these Mahuridika things. I don't know why no one figured out this racket. Someone should start selling Arovas that grow by a river. I don't know. But some Rishonim hold, some Achrenim hold that that's a Hidda Lechatchidish to get Arovas that grow by a river. Then Hadassim, some Achrenim point out, there's a Bahag that's quoted in Yeridaya, that the Gemara talks in Hilchas Treifas, in Eilu Treifas, about Kitarfa Diosa, the size of a leaf of Hadassim. So in Yeridaya, they said, the Bahag says Tarfa Diosa is approximately the size of the thumbnail. People have different size thumbs, they have different size nails. But what he means to say over here is that if you have hadassim where the leaves are very big, bigger than the nail of a thumb, so that's a shaila, maybe that's not a min kosher. So you try to get, years ago, I remember when I was, before my bar mitzvah, all hadassim were small leaves. Now a lot of times you have hadassim where the leaves are gigantic. So it's really questionable. The Achranim say it's questionable whether such hadassim are acceptable or not. Hadassim, of course, have to be mishaloshim. You have to have a minimum of three. If you have four or five all growing together, is avada good. The Ramah has a kula, which was not really accepted. If you have two on the same level and the third one is above it, slightly above it, that's also called mishaloshim. But the later poskim are not happy about that. They say, no, it has to be mishaloshim. You have to get the rov of the shear. The shear has to be three tvachim tall, so the 51% of the shear has to be mishaloshim. One of the didim the Gemara has is that the esrog has to be yesh bo heter achila. If it's a non-kosher esrog, then you can't use it. How can you have a non-kosher esrog? I mean, a little chaza fell on it and gave a blia, tam ki ikah. So that's a machlokes. The Magen Avraham quotes the Shulti Giborim, says that that's called yesh bo heter achila, and he says he's not so convinced that he's right. Rabbi Kevegar, I think, thinks that the Magen Avraham is right against the Shulti Giborim, that if it has a blia of treifus, that's not called Ein Ba Heter Achila. Gemara's Ein Ba Heter Achila means that the Yesrig itself is treif. The Yesrig is Tevel, the Yesrig is Zorla, that's Ein Ba Heter Achila. So that's what some have the taina that this year If you're going to rely on the people in Eretz Yisrael have a Shas HaTchak, so they're relying on a Het HaMechira that the Rabbanut makes. We in America, we don't have any Shas HaTchak, so why do we have to rely on any Kulas? So the Rabbeinu Tam is quoted by the Tosfos on the last daf in Yevamos, the very last daf in Yevamos. Tosfos quotes Rabbeinu Tam that Mishumar is also Bachila. If someone had a farm in Eretz Yisrael and he was supposed to be Mafkir the Peris in Shnas HaShmit and he wasn't Mafkir, he was Meshama the Peris, he locked the gates of his field and he didn't allow anyone to take it, he didn't fulfill the mitzvah of Hashvis Tishmetenu and Atashta to be Mafkir it. So the Rabbeinu Tam interprets Pshat in a Gemara in the last staff in Yevamos, and he interprets Pshat in the Toras Kohanim in the Sifra, beginning of Parshas Bahar, that those Peris are also Bachila. So that's what people taina now, that these people in Eretz Yisrael, they're relying on Het HaMechira, but we don't have a Shas HaTchak, let them rely whatever they want. Why should we rely on the Het HaMechira? So if you don't hold from the Het HaMechira, so all of the Esrogim are Meshumer. So if it's all Meshumer, according to Rabbi Natam, it's also Bachila, so it should be possible. So Ramosha Feinstein has a tshuva about this, and he writes, like all the poskim say, Rav HaRishanim don't agree with the Rabbi Natam. The Chazon Ish writes like that in his Sefer, that we don't paskin like the Rabbi Natam because Rav HaRishonim called Meshumer as Mutter. Rav Chaim Kanievsky published a letter that the Chazon Ish later wrote to someone else, a private person, that he should be Machmer for the Rabbi Natam. So he said, that's a private letter he sent to that person, but in the Sefer he wrote, we don't paskin like the Rabbi Natam. Chaim Kanievsky says, no, Chazon Ish changed his mind. So you can take the whole Chazon Ish and put it in Shemus. Nothing it says in the Chazon Ish is reliable there. And then puts out a Sefer. He says, that's the din. He sent a letter to some tzaddik. You should be machmer. That's for the tzaddik. That's not for everybody. It's very paladin. So that's what Rav Soloveitchik said. That's what Rav Moshe said. That's what the Chazon Ish says. Rav HaPoskim don't hold from Meshuma. They disagree with the Rabbi Natam. Then Rav Soloveitchik added on, that even if you hold like the Rabbi Natam, he doesn't think that this is called Eimah Het Rachil. Eimah Het Rachil means if the thing is treif. Here there is no such din. The Rabbi Natam didn't mean to say that the food becomes treif. If the farmer locked the gates and then I'm in cahoots with him and I buy the peris that he didn't allow to become hefker, so it's considered as if I'm aiding and abetting the criminal in the act of keeping the gates closed. So if I eat those peris, it's as if I helped them lock the gates, because if he wouldn't have any customers later, he wouldn't lock the gates. What's he going to do with the peris? The Gemara says, Lav achbar gamber al chura ganver, because he knows he's going to have customers or buy the peris later, that's why he locks the gates. So whoever's going to buy the peris and eat them is considered as if we're aiding and abetting the man in his aveira, in his sin, and not being mafkir. So don't eat the peris. Rav Soloveitchik said, don't eat the asrik. It doesn't mean that it's eimah heter achil. Eimah heter achil means if it's treif. It's not treif. If you'll eat it, it'll turn out it's considered as if you help participate in the locking of the gates. But he thought that that's not called Eimah Heter Achil. The Netziv has in his tshuvas, were also printed after he died. His almana needed some money, so she printed his collection of his tshuvas. So he has a whole tshuva about the Shemitah b'zman hazeh, and the Esregim, so he says he always is a big supporter of the Yishuv in Eretz Yisrael. He always insists on not buying an Israeli Esreg, even after Shemitah year. So the only thing he was worried about, look, he said, they're relying on a Het HaMechira, that's their Esik. There's no Lifnei Ivel Esita Michshol. If I help them, if I do it, they rely on Shita to hold that the Het HaMechira is legitimate. So the Poskim, the Mishar Melech says, and there's a Machlekes, but there's something that's also a Mutter. I hold us, and he holds Mutter. So there's no Avera. If I help him do that thing, he's following a legitimate Pesach, he holds Mutter. But the Shaila is, the Netziv was concerned about the following Shaila, that you're not allowed to give the May Perish Shvias to an Amoretz, Shvias Tafes is Dameha. When you have Perish that grew in Yom Shnas HaShmita, they have Kedusha's Perish Shvias. And the Din is Liochla, the Gemara learns out from the Pasuk that if someone pays money to buy the Perish, so the money is Nitfas B'Kedusha's Perish Shvias. The Perish retain Kedusha's Perish Shvias, and the money is Nitfas also. So the one who sells the Esregim to me is supposed to use that money to buy food and eat it before the Shas HaBir of those fruits, of the perishvies, the original perishvies. So we know that the merchant who's selling the Esrogim is not going to, he's going to put the money in the bank. He's not going to buy food with this and eat it before this Man HaBir. This is what they do, this is the whole Parnassa for the whole year. They sell Esrogim and then they relax the rest of the year. They sit and they learn. Or they play cards, whatever they do the rest of the year. That's the whole Parnassa for the whole year. They're making money on this. So the Netziv was concerned about that. He wasn't concerned about Lifnei Iver. They rely on the Het HaMechir, but he's concerned, I'm going to give him money, so it's going to be nitzvah to kedushas perishvias. So that's my aveira. I'm So far, there is no money that has Kedushas Perishvis. If I buy the Esregim, I'm creating Kedushas Perishvis on the money, and I know he's not going to use it properly. So the Netziv writes the way he solved the problem. He quotes the Gemara in the last parak of Maseches Avodah Zarah, the fifth parak in Avodah Zarah, that the Gemara says the din of Shvi'is Tafes Tzemeh only applies if the Perishvis are still bien, and then you give the money. So the Netziv says he bought the Esreg Shal Shmita from Eretz Yisrael on credit, and they trusted him, and he said after Sukkot he's going to pay for the Esreg. After Sukkot he ate it up, and then he paid for it. So the din is, the Gemara says, once you ate up the Perishvis, so there's no din of Shvi'is Tafes Tzemeh. It's only Tafes Damav. If it's Zeh Tachazeh, if the pre is here and the money is here, and I say Zeh Tachazeh, just like this has Kedushas Perishvis, the money also has Kedushas Perishvis. So that was the Yetzer that the Netziv had. The Asregi merchants are not going to trust me, they're not going to trust you. So there was a big tzaddik who just passed away in Eretz Yisrael, Rabbi Yamin Zilber. The Chazanish used to call him Rabbi Yamin HaTzaddik. He lived in Bnei Brak. He wrote many, many svarim. He was in disfavor the last 25 years because of politics, because he didn't go along with the Degel HaTorah or whatever. He didn't even know what politics is. The man was above politics. So because he didn't go along with the politics, so they boycotted his shul. He was known as a tzaddik mefurs. And he writes in one of his many svarim, you have to be very careful, they quote things in the name of Chazanish, and a lot of times it's not accurate. Whenever you hear something in the name of Chazanish, you have to be mevar to make sure that it's really what the Chazanish said. So he quotes one thing, he checked into it. Chazanish said that if you pay by check, there's nothing to be teifas damav about. The esrig is here, but there's nothing there on the other side. My check, I have a right to draw against YU's account. YU has a right to draw against the donor's account. The donors have a right to draw against their customer's account. They can draw against their boss's account. Everybody's drawing against everybody else's account. My said, there's nothing there. It's not that there's money sitting in the bank and the $50 in the bank is that tachazeh for the esrig. There's nothing there. It's just a shtar. Check is a shtar. You have a right to take money out of my bank. You're not going to take money out of my bank. The bank is going to... Everything is just on paper. It's all in the luften. Especially these days, you know, for sure everything is in the luften. So that's what the Netziv obviously didn't have a checking account. So he had to pay in cash. So he had to eat up the esrig first and then pay the money. But today people have checking account. You pay by credit card. Also, there's no Zeh Tachazeh. So that's what Rabbi Yom Zilber quotes in one of his many Svarim. The Rishonim have a big machlokes. On the first day, Sukkot, you need Shalachem in HaTorah. Do you need a Kinyan Deraisa or is a Kinyan Derabbanan also good? So Hagbah would be a Kinyan Derabbanan. So if you leave your esrog in the shul, we're just going to make Hagbah, so that's only a Kinyan Derabbanan. But take the Esrog home. Kinyan Chatzah is a Kinyan Menater. Take it in your car. You spend it with a Kinyan Chatzah. There's a way to make a Kinyan Deraisa without Moiz comes. I guess he trusted the Netziv. See, by us, he wouldn't trust me. So I give him a check. So he's not worried about the check. He's not worried the check is going to bounce. But instead of just relying on the Kinyan Hagbos, I'm going to take the Lulav home and I'll be kind of with the Kinyan Chatsa. So that'll be a Kinyan there. I said, no problem of Smichus Das. He knows he has the check. You have to be careful when you pick an Esrog. You shouldn't be round like a ball. Shulchan Aruch quotes from the Gemara that if it's ogul kikadur, then it's puzzle. The Ramon Shulchan Aruch has a chumrah that before you bench esrig, all the women know you have to take off your rings, and the men have to take off their tefillin shal yad. Shouldn't have any chatzitzes. The Ramon says Meikar Adini thinks that it's not a problem, but he says that's the chumrah. Mai says that's the chumrah that people observe. The Gemara raises the issue about the lulav container. So the Gemara says, since it's lena also, kola na also in a chatzit. That's how we talk about it. Since it adds to the heder, so that's not considered a chatzit. There are a lot of dinim in Shulchan Aruch about the esrogim with chazazas. They'll never show you an esrog with a chazazas. They'll never sell it to you. Once in 50 years, they'll show you an esrog with a chazazas. Or hadasim with berries. They may show you hadasim with berries. They're never going to sell you hadasim that have more berries than they have leaves. Another meruv me'alav. They'll never say, you never, Most of these psulim never come up. You can't go wrong. You just have to be careful. The hadasim should be mishuloshim. The esrik shouldn't be a murkov. That's what the Magen Avraham quotes. Rav Soloveitchik used to tell over the story that when his father took his first rabbinical position, so there was a dayan in the city. So the dayan knew Shulchan Aruch inside out. And his father knew Gemara. His father didn't know Shulchan Aruch so well. So the minig used to be all the balabatim came to visit the rabbi in Shabbos Chalamoy. So the dayan wanted to humiliate the rabbi. So he started a whole conversation talking, learning with the Rav Moshe Soloveitchik. So he started to talk about Esrik Hamurkov. So Rav Moshe Soloveitchik said, yeah, it's a beferish and mechaber that it's no good. It's not in the mechaber. The first one is the Magen Avraham, quotes it. So the dayan knew that it's not in the mechaber. So he said, oh, really? I don't remember. He doesn't remember. Where does it say in the mechaber that Esrik Hamurkov? He knew he's not going to find it. So he opened up the Shulchan Aruch and says, Esrik. He says, Murkov is not an Esrik. Says the word Esrik. Murkov is not an Esrik. The Magen Avraham has two reasons. That's the accepted reason. That's the reason that we assume. Then he has another reason from the Levush that he's not happy with. Magen Avraham is not happy. That the reason why Murkov is possible is because Nevda Bayavera. It's a mitzvah boba avera. That even though the one who took care of the growth of the Esrikim was a non-Jew, and this is not from the Sheva Mitzvah of the Nerech, not to be marked the Ilonis, but even though it's not from the Sheva Mitzvahs, the Raman Paskins like that Tana, that non-Jews are Muzer, it's an Avera for a non-Jew also. He's not Chai Misa. It's not listed among the Sheva Mitzvahs of the Nerech, so he's not Chai Misa for violating it, but it still is also to do Sirus, or to do Harkovas Ilonis, the Raman Paskins is an Isa Deraisa. So the Levush says, based on that, since the Nochri who did the Harkova of the lemon, that's what he's talking about, Harkova of a lemon tree, with an Esrik tree, since he did an Avera to do Harkova, so that's why it's a mitzvah Baba Avera. So the Magen Avraham thinks that that's not a valid reason. And the Beis Ephraim has a whole truth about that. He also thinks that that's not correct at all. So that's not the real reason. The real reason is because it's the wrong mint. If it's a Murkav with another tree, so it's the wrong mint. So that's where Moshe Soloveitchik said, it's enough in a Mechal. Okay, I want to wish everybody a good Yor, a good Yantif.
You good?